Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 22, 2018. It's on to November. T-minus 244 days until it's back to the polls for the general election. A quick review of Tuesday's primary before we turn our attention to November. Rantoul High's class of 86. In the past 9 months, alums have been tabbed Village Police Chief Tony Brown, the first native to hold the position since Alan Jones Sr., and presumed Champaign County Sheriff Jones' son Alan Jr., the winner of Tuesday night's GOP primary. They've come a long way since high school. In many respects, as Jones joked Wednesday, he was seriously rocking the mullet back then. The diversity cause. How times have changed. In 1990, Centralia native Roland Burris became just the second African-American elected Attorney General of any state. Come November, two will duke it out for the job Lisa Madigan is leaving. Urbana's Erica Harold for the Republicans, Chicago's Kwame Raoul for the Dems. 3. Bement Elementary, established 1899. With big changes coming to Monticello's Washington School Elementary, established 1894, and a total makeover in the works of Champaign's Dr. Howard Elementary, established 1910, the Piatt County School is in a league of its own in our area. Despite opening in the 19th century, it's in tip-top shape and filled with beauty from that time period of construction, Bement Superintendent Sheila Greenwood says. The losers. 1. The I Can't Take Another Political Ad crowd, a gubernatorial matchup that's good news for TV station's bottom line. J.B. Pritzker worth more than Michael Jordan and Roger Penske combined, per Forbes. Versus Bruce Rauner, $91 million in state taxable income in 2016, per his Form 1040, could lead to a statewide run on DVR machines. For last week alone, the two campaigns spent $71,070 for 146 spots to run on WCIA alone, according to FCC filings. 2. Opponents of marijuana legalization. In 2016, voters in the city of Champaign and Cunningham Townships gave thumbs up to an advisory question that asked whether Illinois should join Colorado in legalizing pot. On Tuesday, 68.2% of Cook County voters said yes to a similar question. Advisory questions are non-binding, but the votes could lead legislators to act in the months ahead. 3. Newspaper editorial boards. Of the biggies, only the Sun-Times went 2 for 2 in endorsing gubernatorial candidates winning. Among the newspapers that hit 500, backing Chris Kennedy, this one, the Tribune, and those in Arlington Heights, Peoria, and Springfield. The Bloomington and Decatur papers both backed Daniel Biss. Alleged mosque bombers. Domestic terrorism suspects waive hearing. Prosecution's next step is to seek grand jury indictment of 4. 3 of the 4 Ford County men arrested last week for possession of a machine gun appeared Wednesday at the federal courthouse in Urbana to waive their right to a preliminary hearing. Michael Harry, 47, Michael McWhorter, 29, Alice Mack, 18, all of Clarence, each waived their preliminary hearing, while the fourth, Joe Morris, 22, had already done. All 4 remain. The next step will be for prosecutors to take their case to a grand jury, which could return an indictment if it finds probable cause. Federal prosecutors in Minnesota filed charges last week accusing Harry, Morris, and McWhorter of bombing a mosque in Minnesota. They are also suspected in the attempted bombing of a women's health clinic in Champaign last year. Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff, is believed to have been the leader of a homegrown domestic terrorism group called the White Rabbit 3%, Illinois Patriot Freedom Fighters Militia, which the other men belonged to. Like McWhorter and Mack, Harry said nothing in court Wednesday besides acknowledging that he understood he was waiving his rights to a preliminary hearing. Harry, who wore a yellow prison jumpsuit, was represented by Assistant Federal Public Defender Elizabeth Pollock. Wednesday's hearings were brief, with no new details revealed about the case. McWhorter was represented by Urbana attorney Baku Patel, and Mack was represented by Urbana's Lawrence Salava. The hearings came a day after McWhorter was ordered to appear in Ford County Circuit Court this June. According to a petition signed by State's Attorney Andrew Killian and Chief Probation Officer Ellen Maxey, McWhorter violated the probation he received 2 years ago for a drug-related conviction four times. The petition alleges that McWhorter did so by committing the offense of terrorism on August 7, 2017, by taking part in the bombing of the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota. That same day, McWhorter allegedly violated his probation by committing the offense of unlawful use of a weapon, the petition alleges. According to federal authorities, McWhorter allegedly threw a homemade bomb in the mosque and fled before it exploded. No injuries were reported. A third probation violation allegedly occurred on November 7th, when McWhorter again committed the offense of unlawful use of a weapon in connection with the attempted firebombing of the Women's Health Practice at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. The fourth alleged violation occurred January 1, 2018, when McWhorter allegedly committed a home invasion in Indiana. According to the federal authorities, McWhorter admitted that he participated in the home invasion, intending to rob a Hispanic drug dealer of cash while posing as police with a search warrant. McWhorter was sentenced to 2 years of probation on February 23, 2016, after pleading guilty to two misdemeanor counts of unlawful delivery of cannabis and one misdemeanor count of unlawful possession with intent to deliver cannabis. In return for his plea, misdemeanor charges of possession of 2.5 to 10 grams of cannabis and possession of drug paraphernalia were dismissed. Like McWhorter, Harry has a separate criminal case pending in Ford County. Harry is charged with unlawful restraint, a Class 4 felony, and misdemeanor battery in connection with the alleged assault of a neighbor in July 2017. The final four. At a forum this week in Urbana, the four finalists in the running to be Diane Marlin's first city administrator laid out their plans for the position. Here, in their own words, is why they believe they're uniquely qualified for the job. John Burt, Groton, Connecticut town manager. Groton has a similar amount of people and a lot of things that remind me of Urbana. I've had a lot of experience with budgets, mostly in difficult environments. I've had to do a lot of cutting and coming up with new revenues, things that I think make me an ideal candidate here. Elizabeth Hannon, Urbana Finance Director. I've been in this CU community for more than 30 years and worked in local government for almost all that time. I was Champaign's City Budget Officer. In that role, it was important for me to develop a broad understanding of city services. I took time to develop relationships with city staff at all levels in the organization. I also spent 10 years as a manager of the Champaign Public Works Department, so I've been on both the administrative and operational sides of the house. I believe that gives me a better understanding of how things really work in local government. Angel Jones, Maryland Management Consultant. I bring with me three core values that I take with me everywhere I go: respect, service, and equity. Respect being that everyone I encounter I treat with dignity when there may be disagreements. Service, I am committed to public service. This is what gets me excited about going into work every day because it is my passion. Equity, I believe every voice deserves to be heard, and I believe in inclusionary processes in terms of facilities, information, and policies. Carol Mitten, Arlington, Virginia, Deputy County Manager. I'm very familiar with the challenges associated with communities interacting with large universities. We have Georgetown University, American University, Catholic University of America, and George Washington University. When I worked at the Department of Homeland Security, we were building a headquarters in a low-income minority neighborhood, and I was selected for that position explicitly because I had relationships with that neighborhood. I was the person who would be the face of this large federal agency to these community folks. I understand people's needs to be heard, and they want to make sure their concerns have been taken into consideration in decision-making. The health reporter is in. When will the new Medicare card start arriving? If you live in Illinois, you'll get your new card sometime after June, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The new cards are being mailed in a rolling wave of 7 groups of states, starting next month and ending in April 2019. Illinois is included in the 3rd group of states, along with Arkansas, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Further details on timing will become available after the mailings begin. You can check on the status of your new card at Medicare.gov starting in April. Nobody has to do anything to obtain these new cards. They're being mailed automatically without charge. All benefits will remain the same. The new cards are being issued without Social Security numbers to help protect against identity theft if they become lost or stolen. They also won't include your gender or require your signature. Each card will contain only your name, a new beneficiary ID number that is unique to you, and dates your Medicare Part A and Part B coverages began. The Federal Trade Commission has warned you should still safeguard your new card as you would any other insurance card. While leaving certain information off the cards can help reduce some kinds of identity thefts. They could still be used fraudulently by someone to obtain medical services in your name. Some tips for Medicare for getting ready for this change. Make sure your mailing address is up to date. If you've moved, you can correct your mailing address by contacting Social Security online or by calling 1-800-772-1213. Keep in mind that your new card may not exactly arrive when your friends and neighbors receive theirs. Avoid being scammed. Medicare has made it clear it won't be calling and asking for any of your personal information. If anyone calls claiming to be from Medicare and asking for any of your personal information or money in connection with the new cards, hang up. You can report a fraud attempt by contacting Medicare at 1-800-633-4227. Keep your current card for now, then shred it when the new one arrives. If you have a separate card for a Medicare Advantage plan, hang on to that because you'll continue to need it. Here's Jim Dye's column. The boss, once again, shows who's the boss. It was victory almost all around on primary election day for Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan. His Democratic choice for governor, billionaire J.B. Pritzker, won in a romp. The boss's choice for Attorney General, State Senator Kwame Raoul, grabbed the Democratic nomination. But one victory must have been particularly sweet for the vindictive Madigan. He once again crushed a foe, a result that both pleases him personally and sends a message to Democratic House members about the dangers of stepping out of line. State Representative Scott Drury, a Democrat from Highwood, had the gall in January 2017 to oppose Madigan's re-election as House Speaker and question the 75-year-old Madigan's legislative leadership. For that, Madigan targeted him for political extinction, stripping Drury of committee assignments, overseeing a primary challenge if he ran again for the House, and making it clear Drury is persona non grata in the legislature. Undeterred, Drury, a former federal prosecutor, countered by announcing that he planned to run for governor, then switched to the race for attorney general after incumbent Democrat Lisa Madigan announced she wouldn't run again. If elected, Drury said, he would focus the attention of his new office on, among other things, the kind of corrupt patronage politics for which Madigan is so well known. Madigan didn't like that either, orchestrating from behind the scenes challenges to Drury's election petitions that ate up time and money the Drury campaign could not afford to lose. About a month ago, a state appeals court finally put an end to the petition challenge farce by ordering that Drury's name remain on the ballot. In the end, however, Madigan prevailed. Drury finished in fifth place in an 8-person race, drawing only 8% of the vote. Like those who crossed Madigan in the past and paid the price, former Chicago State Representative Kenneth Duncan and one-time close Madigan aide Gary LaPale, Drury has been expelled from Democratic Party politics, at least for now. Despite his defeat, Representative Drury wasn't talking like a loser after the primary results. On January 11, 2017, I fired the shot heard round Illinois. I didn't vote for Mike Madigan for House Speaker. At that time, I said I wanted to give hope to the hopeless and that I anticipated repercussions. The repercussions were almost immediate. Petty at first, they ultimately transitioned to an all-out blitz to thwart our campaign. Indeed, no campaign had more hurdles thrown at its way than ours. That, more than anything, shows the power of our message. We came up short yesterday, but we did not lose, and we should not hang our heads. The Berlin Wall did not fall in a day. It ultimately did fall, however. I am confident we have taken chunks out of that wall, Drury said. He opined that his campaign changed the conversation in Illinois. For the first time in decades, Democrats in Illinois feel empowered to speak out against wrongs, not just on the right, but within our own party, and that's okay. Yesterday's final numbers don't tell the whole story. While we have a lot of work to do in the Chicagoland area, everywhere else voters heard our message and voted for change. We must build from there. While I don't know what tomorrow may bring, I know that our journey has just begun, he said. Drury's long-term goal of reforming the Democratic Party may well be achieved, but don't hold your breath. The longest-serving leader of any state or federal legislative body in the history of the United States, Speaker Madigan, will turn 76 on April 19th. Despite his determination to do so, he can't rule Illinois forever. But in the short term, Illinois' status as a bankrupt and dysfunctional state, and pending sexual harassment scandals notwithstanding, who is going to offer an alternative to the Godfather's leadership of the legislature and the state Democratic Party? In other words, what Democratic political wants to be the next Drury, Duncan and LaPale, when those who cross him end up sleeping with the fishes? But even Madigan, who often wins them all, didn't win them all on Tuesday. Indeed, his wallet stands to take a big hit with the defeat of incumbent Democratic Cook County Assessor Joseph Berrios. In rejecting Berrios' bid for another term, Cook County voters demonstrated there are limits to the levels of corruption and incompetence they will tolerate. Who knew? The Chicago news media has been reporting for months about the assessor's office operating as the equivalent of a criminal enterprise that overassesses property, requiring the wealthy to hire connected lawyers to win property tax appeals. Madigan's law firm specializes in those lucrative appeals. He and other connected politicos, like Alderman Edward Burke, make a fortune off the business in which those who can't afford lawyers have to pay what the assessor demands. The Chicago Tribune has reported extensively on the mismanagement of the assessor's office. Leading up to the primary election, it ran daily editorials explaining why Berrios must go. After he was defeated, the Tribune ran an editorial demanding Berrios' immediate resignation. All the political heavyweights in Cook County rallied to Berrios' defense, but the public finally had all it could stand. It couldn't stand no more. The assessor's office property tax scam generates the grease that runs a good portion of Cook County's political machinery. If it's run right, the consequences could be dramatic for the insiders. Madigan can't be happy about that, though, even he had much else to be pleased with in Tuesday's Democratic primary. Tolono Village Board. Attack prompts revamp of rules. Village weighing ordinance change on dangerous pets. The Tolono Village Board is crafting a new animal control ordinance after an incident in which a pet was attacked in its own yard by two neighboring dogs. On March 5th, a German Shepherd named Chloe sustained severe injuries after she was attacked by two pit bulls. Chloe's owner, Barb Holt, requested that the ordinance contain a provision that dogs deemed to be dangerous would not be allowed to live in the village. "If they viciously do something like they did to my dog, something has to be done," Holt said. Village President Rob Murphy said Tolono's attorney, Mark Miller, is checking into the legality of enforcing such a provision. "Your dog had a right to be in its yard and not be messed with," Murphy told Holt. Miller presented the board with a draft of an ordinance based on discussions with village officials and ordinances from other municipalities. In the draft ordinance, a dangerous dog is defined as one that behaves in a manner that a reasonable person would believe poses a serious and unjustified imminent threat of serious physical injury or death to a person or a companion animal. Excuse me. Or that without justification bites a person and does not cause serious physical injury. The proposed ordinance states that dogs can be impounded for running at large, biting a person, or acting in a way that fits the definition of dangerous or vicious under state law. Violations of the dangerous dog regulations would result in fines between $100 and $750. Village trustee Ryan Perry wondered if the ordinance would include a limitation on the number of dogs a resident is allowed. The new ordinance would replace existing ordinances that were written in 1979 and 2006. "A lot of the state statutes they relate to don't even exist anymore," Police Chief Rick Rainey said. "After the ordinance is finalized, it will be sent to the village's codification service for review." Champaign County Animal Control Director Stephanie Juice explained to the village board that her department impounded the pit bulls for not being current on their rabies violations and declared them dangerous after an investigation, which happens after any bite incident, regardless of where in the county it takes place. "The dogs are now not allowed to leave the owner's property unleashed. If the dogs go on public property, they have to be muzzled. If they are in their own yard, they have to be tethered." Juice encouraged anyone who witnesses a violation to call her department. "We'll come in and impound them right away," she said. Institute of Aviation program becomes permanent. After 3 years as a grants-funded program at Parkland College, the former University of Illinois Institute of Aviation will become a regular academic program and institutional department at the Champaign-based community college. The Parkland Board of Trustees Wednesday night unanimously approved making the change during a meeting at the Institute of Aviation in the old Willard Airport Terminal south of Champaign. "This program is so important for the airport. It's important for the students who are going into aviation and who will be pilots, who will fly us around the country and the world in the future," said Board Member Greg Knott. "And I also got a lot of pressure from community members who wanted to keep the institute here at the airport and for the future jobs that could spin out from this. So what we did here tonight was send a signal that we moved this off from a sort of temporary status to a permanent status, and that we're going to be here for the long run." Pam Lau, the Vice President for Academic Services at Parkland, said the college's aviation program began in the fall of 2014 with $3 million in seed funding from the U of I, plus a $1 a year building lease. "Among the challenges facing the institute at that time," she said, "was the need to have at least 65 students to break even on instructional costs, to develop several pathways for students interested in aviation careers, to build up the instructional team, and to upgrade the aging fleet of planes." Lau said the number of aviation students has grown from 52 in fiscal year 2015 to 67 this year, and that the number of earned credit hours taken has nearly doubled from 180 in fiscal year 2015 to 353 this year, and the tuition value of non-aviation credit hours by aviation students has increased from about $67,000 to more than $440,000. "The program is operating in the black this year," she said, "and about $1.1 million of the original $3 million in seed funding remains." "Everything is going in the right direction," Lau said. This fall, she said, the institute will begin offering a 6-credit-hour certificate in unmanned aircraft systems, or drones, and will look into upgrading the technology in its aircraft while downsizing the fleet. Parkland President Tom Ramage said the Institute has 28 planes, and that number could be reduced. And we have some area update. BMET endorses random drug tests for its athletes. No formal action was taken, but BMET school board members endorsed random drug testing of district athletes beginning this fall. My personal opinion is yes, Jean Strack said. Others seem to concur with the idea that first raised last month by high school principal Doug Kepley. It's such a problem in schools that I'm glad to see we are taking an aggressive, proactive intent to try to help this problem, Janice Fogerson added. Board member Todd Wright asked Kepley, do you think it will help a lot, a little? Said Kepley, I think it's going to give some of those kids a chance to make the choice when put in a situation to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to risk that, so I do think it will help. He added that some districts expand random testing to all extracurricular activities, which means organizations like the Spanish Club and National Honor Society would be included. Others expanded even further to include driver's education students. Board member Jeff Funk, an attorney by trade, said it's iffy whether the latter would withstand a legal challenge. The board agreed that only athletes should be tested at this time. Kepley said he would draft guidelines for the board to consider at a future meeting. Superintendent Sheila Greenwood said she would like to see the district allow parents to opt their children into the random drug testing program if approved. Hearts of Gold nominations sought. Do you know someone who always steps up when help is needed? The Community Foundation of East Central Illinois is seeking nominations for its annual Hearts of Gold Awards, which recognizes everyday heroes who are generous with their time, talent, or resources and add value to organizations they serve and communities they call home. Consider nominating neighbors, volunteers, business people, teachers, students, mentors, anyone who has helped enhance the quality of life in East Central Illinois counties, including Champaign, Coles, Douglas, Edgar, Ford, Iroquois, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion, the foundation advised. Nominations can be submitted through the foundation's website at cfeci.org. The deadline is March 28th. GCMS School Board, air conditioning project approved. School board members approved a $603,000 air conditioning project for Gibson City Melvin Sibley Elementary. The project includes three components, a new electrical main to replace an aging one, a new air conditioning system for the gym, and central air for the northern wing of the building, where kindergarten and preschool classrooms are located. Superintendent Jeremy Darnell said the project is an expansion of an existing contract which included the air conditioning upgrades. The gym, built in 1928, has never had an AC system, while the kindergarten wing has been running off an aging system. Darnell estimated annual savings about $30,000 once the project is completed over the summer. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 22, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.